welcome to the War Master Podcast episode 27 with Paul and Barry.
Hello indeed, viewers, and this is going to be called a creative interlude.
Viewers again. Viewers. With the viewers. The
oh yeah. Viewing. Like,
one day we'll have a webcam and they'll see you here in your pants.
Oh god.
Just your pants.
Well, it's not Naked Attraction, let's not do that.
You'll have to tell me more about that, because I heard you talking to my wife about it.
Yeah,
you but better not to me. To me, so what's Naked Attraction, Paul?
Well,
it's creative interlude, that's what we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay, so...
Well, what's Naked Attraction? What's all this about?
Okay, so this morning, I was at work yesterday, and it is Tuesday the 26th. It's in the evening for us. First time we've recorded in the evening for a while. Anyway, on my Facebook feed, it said this thing about Channel 4 outrageous program called Naked Attraction. And I was like, I clicked on it, and because you know, it's the stories, the lead stories that are trending. And I looked at it, and it was basically this outrageous Channel 4 show, controversial. People hated it on outrageous.
Outrageous.
I was like, well, I'll have to watch it, won't I?
You have to.
So I got it on catch-up TV, because you can. And basically, it's a dating show where you're naked. You know, like...
Completely bollock naked.
So what happens is they have the person who's, like, the one hosting it, she's dressed, right? And they have the person... First of all, they got a man on first. A woman on first.
Right.
And she's wearing clothes. And they have six doors, screens, like in the Amsterdam Red Light District.
Oh, yeah.
Coloured like that. And they reveal naked people. First of all, they reveal up to their waist. So you've got six people standing
blokes
there.
Blokes is
six
first.
Blokes. So six dicks hanging out. And then they discuss, which one do you like the look of? And that's what? It's outrageous. And it's like, and then, oh, well, I like that one. Don't like that one. That one's got good girth. And it's like, and then off that alone, and then they turn around and show their asses. And off that alone, she bins one of them.
What, that she has to bin one?
Yeah, yeah. And then it reveals up to their chest, so it's their torso below the neck. And it's like, oh, okay, like this, don't like that. And then she bins off more. And they can't talk, these people.
Well, they don't need to talk, do they?
Yeah, yeah, and then it reveals the whole lot of them. And they're, standing there, naked. Again, they can't talk. And she well, I like the look of him, don't like the look of him, bins him off. And then she's down to two. And it's just, and then they allowed to talk. And she has to go get naked now.
And they pick, do they?
Well, no. And then she comes back and she asks them a few questions. And she, and then that's it. They go. So it's basically like blind date.
They just go into you just have a bed.
Yeah, no, it's like blind date.
Mattress in a corner.
You go and it's a month later. Well, we got her really well. And it's crazy. I just thought, but it was car crash TV.
Yeah.
The Office, I had to watch The Office, but I couldn't re-watch it because it was so hard to watch. I found it really hard to watch.
Why, and Jeremy Brent?
No, just because of the style of humour. It's just like, oh my god, that's so embarrassing. Like, it's so difficult. And it's the same for this programme.
So did you grow up watching The Word on Friday night?
No.
So they had this slot in it, this spot, and it basically was I'll do anything to be on telly, basically. And they had them do all kinds of crazy stuff. just ridiculous stuff. Anything you could believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they do. And this basically sounds like this.
Yeah,
to get on telly.
But I found myself being drawn back to watch it all. Because then they had...
Well, then you just draw to look at dicks. Yeah,
the next one... It's just because, I was looking at it, how does this work? What if one of them gets erect?
Well, it's unlikely.
What if it did?
What's the word? It's an erector muscle. You've got no control over it. It just happens, doesn't it? You can't say turn it off.
Well, yeah, well, that's the whole... I mean, part of it was I get the idea behind this show that you might would you be attracted to someone if you just saw them naked, in a sense, more or less? But it was just so impersonal. It was like Romans choosing slaves of a market. It was good teeth in that one. Oh, good childbearing hips, that.
Not too big, though.
They're just being so subjective and horrible. I was just anyway, I'll be watching it.
That's what we've become then, I guess.
Because the second contestant was a bisexual woman. So she had men and women choosing. She was choosing off.
Choosing from?
Yeah.
That's anything, yeah?
Yeah, it's like...
Maybe
wasn't
one with
yeah,
both.
didn't I'll take anything. And the most weirdest thing was, it's at the start, I'd say. So, the bisexual was, checking out the lower halves of her six. And one of the men could raise his scrotum, move his balls... Without,
Oh, yeah, yeah. The old kung fu thing.
Yeah,
you can bring them inside, can't you?
Yeah, and he was doing that.
Right.
He, like, did it on camera. And it was just, like, freaky. Like, anyway. That's, yeah, so...
Right, so I was talking
to your wife about it. So we should explain what's going on, Barry.
No, don't worry, I'll put a preamble because I'll have to warn people about the potential X-rated nature of the start of our show because I haven't seen any of this, but it does sound interesting. So it's, what do they call it now?
Naked attraction.
When something's not for office consumption.
Not for office edition. Not for work edition.
Whatever. So this is
War Master Podcast X-rated, is it?
For that bit, at least. Right, so we haven't been... It hasn't been that long since our last episode. No. So what have you been doing, Paul, apart from watching Naked Attraction?
Okay, well...
Did you watch it with Hannah?
No. She'd watched it live, and it's like... Mm. Anyway, since we recorded last, I've been quite a social thing, but wargaming-wise, I played one game of War Machine, and that was against Eric, and that was today.
Oh. Yeah. How did that go?
It was glorious.
Miserable.
Basically, I played Eric quite regularly, and he wanted to use Trollbloods, and I was like, okay, I'm using these two pairings. You've played Sloan before, and we rolled up the scenario. It was not a kill box. It was Linebreaker.
So he knows what's coming.
You know what's coming. You know what I'm going to put down. And he put down Borka.
Berka, the one on the bear?
Off the bear, who has Windwall.
The first one.
Right. And it's a pretty... good anti-shooty list, but I still controlled it.
Because if you didn't know, they've rushed out an errata after 3 years of internal game phase testing. So they fired out, and it was like a 14-page errata within the first couple of weeks. But amazingly, they took off a little bit of accuracy off Sloan and gave her loads of extra beams.
More damage output, which is better.
Yeah, exactly, because you don't generally have a problem hitting stuff.
No, hitting is not hard.
Just killing. So now you can kill more.
Yeah, it's what PP gave, took away, they gave you more back. Yeah, it's great to be Signar right now. it's just glorious.
I'm not playing Signar.
It's Signar Christmas every day. Fantastic. So I was like, you made me better.
My idea to play against it, I was going to use Menoth because they have this ability to shut down non-magical shooting, which is a great deal of what Signar is. But apparently now they've put a little objective
in. You can get an objective...
that gives you that shooting.
Armory, right? Which gives you superior ammunition, which means a model can get magical shooting.
Brilliant.
So
that's just what you need.
Yeah.
Just what you need.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, I'll do it anyway. Yeah,
because already the Warcaster can ignore it, but now she can give it. And I guess you bring Ayana and Holt and give it out that way
You could do it as well.
Stuff everywhere. Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, it's. Anyway.
It's good to be Signar.
I enjoyed the game, even though I made a real mistake. Like, I wrongly measured my Centurion's threat range. So I ended up trying to charge something that was out of charge range. So I had to do it, because it's that kind of game. And Eric was getting pretty steamed, right? Because I'm just taking his models off. And it's like, okay, well, this has happened. Even with that, it was like, well... Because I had the scenario... I had the zones covered, as in I got behind... Basically... I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but like a troll list sticks together. So your best tactic is to spread out. And so I sent rangers down on the board edge, one on the left... truck commandos on the board edge on the right. I was behind him, and I was like, well, I'll just go score on your flanks when you come forward. I won the game 6-5 on scenario, so we both went to 5 on his turn, but then it was simplicity myself just to contest and score again, because he couldn't spread out his army enough.
Yeah.
And once I was dropping all the individual things, it was quite, well, you can't, this unit can't be in two places at once, because I'm dropping the solos. Yeah, like anything individual.
Yeah.
As in separate activations. So yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, I enjoyed the game. It was like okay, but equally, like this is what War Machine can be, and it's like I've got a sniper for a Warcaster.
Yeah, but normally there's some way to kind of there's some way to win even when you're on the ropes, and I'm not sure there is a way to win when you're on the ropes there.
What made it even more cheese fest was that Sloane's got refuge, so she's backing off when she's shooting. Literally, at one point, I ran her into into my far right table quarter. So literally, she's on the corner of the table. She goes, and so just to take any threat of assassination away. Because I didn't need her anymore. Like, I was just like,
she just had to be within 14 of the stuff.
I was just like, well, she's not contributing now anymore, because I'm going to win on scenario. I'll run her into that corner.
So, yeah.
It was like, I took a picture of it. I was just like, spot where Sloane is like the most furthest away she can possibly be. Yeah, camping, all her focus.
Oh, pause. Mr. Sherwin's here. So, is that you finished now?
Yeah, yeah. So
you ruined Eric. You made him cry. A grown man cry.
Yeah, it was a bit. Well, never mind. Anyway, like that's what. That's what
you know, he'll take it out on those trees when he gets home.
That's what the game is. So anyway,
I've seen his axe. He's got a massive axe. Maybe he'll come round and sort you out with his.
It's no joke, that axe.
Bearded axe, it's
called. Yeah. So, what have you been up to this week, Barry?
No, I only played Magic last night. There's a new set released called Eldritch Moon. Mm-hmm. Wait, werewolves are back, Paul.
What?
Werewolves.
Werewolf. Well, they finally come round again from Innistrad.
Yeah, we're back in Innistrad. Oh, okay. And werewolves got better.
Oh, okay.
More. Many more.
Oh, right. Fantastic. Werewolves. Okay.
So, yeah, werewolves are back. So I did a draft. It was 22 players last night.
That's great. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So I remember the first ever one. It was 3.5 years
ago. Are you keeping the same people or are you like, is it change?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say it's probably a little bit of both. A little bit more competitive than when I started.
Yeah.
And there was me and three others just sat around playing Dirtle.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, it's good. It's good. The set's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so...
Oh, Sherwin's here. Ding dong!
So, to the main thing of the...
Well, you can tell us what you've been doing.
Well, hang on. He's got to introduce himself, hasn't he?
That's true. Paul wants me to put in some music.
Which is going... Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's going to pass the test, my taste test. But if it does, here it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah! You young punks today got nothing on the Macho Man Randy Savage and my generation, and all the legends, because I'm telling you, that's complete mental insanity,
So, Sherwin, you're here.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
And so, we have in the room with us Sherwin Matthews,
Matthew Sherwin.
Or Matthew Sherwin.
Whichever way you want to call it.
Yep, who we've mentioned many times.
Many times. So, what is it? Is it Matthew Sherwin or Sherwin Matthews?
It depends on my official name or my working name, is it?
I don't know.
Everyone has called me Sherwin since time immemorial, so that works.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's
called Sherwin, but he's not Sherwin.
Basically, Sherwin. This episode's come about because Sherwin's
brand. That's it. He's a brand. Sherwin TM.
It's a cult personality.
Corbin. Yeah. Sherwin.
So this episode's come about because Sherwin listens to our podcast, which is very nice, and he said that it would be a shame if we had these broken episodes like over the summer because, like you're away with your family, etc. And he said, you could do a guest one. And I was like, okay, well, let's get Sherwin on as a guest then.
Okay, at this point, it seems very prudent to say that wasn't my intention whatsoever.
That's a bit of empire building. I like it.
Exactly. I kind of thought you'd have, kind of War Master guests on.
So
some of your unstoppable titans.
They're all busy. We've had Alex on a few times.
Yeah.
Jim seems a bit shy. I'll get him on one day. Get him drunk.
He's very... It's interesting because some people are very intimidated by going on tape and it going out there. But fair enough.
Yeah, but he's a lecturer for a day job, so maybe it's just I do this all day. Why do I want to do this in my free time?
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Right, so, Mr. Sherwin, you want to tell us a little bit about you? So, go on. I know it's putting you on the spot, but we need to know. We know who you are, well, mostly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my name's Sherwin. I've been a wargamer for God knows how long, years and years and years.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
president of our local club.
All hail.
Yeah, why not? And
hail Hydra.
And for the most part, I have played in the past, for the last sort of... 5, 6, 7 years or so, an awful lot of War Machine, some Guild Ball as that's turned up. Mm-hmm. I've dabbled in most game systems you can imagine. Blood Bowl's another one.
Yeah.
Pretty much tried most things. Malifaux, whatever fits really for the most part. For that.
So if I was going to describe Sherwin as a gamer, he'd be like somebody that...
Wins.
Like picks. It would be somebody that likes to take rooks. Or paper or scissors. He kind of picks an approach and like, bang, here we go. Like, he's the kind of guy that did, what was that, Deathwing in 40K.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to, here's my 20 Terminators, come and take this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of find that I'm a bit obsessive when it comes to that. Like, I've got a case at home with 100 Deathwing in it.
Exactly.
Which is ludicrous, because you can never use that many of them. But, you kind of get locked into, this is how many models I'm going to do, and this is what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, it's...
So in a recent event, Paul mentioned that you brought, like, a Battle Box only kind of job.
Yeah, group the, only the last job. War Machine event I played, the full Steam one, Sherwin took every prize. The sportsman painted and won the thing, and he won it with a Minions battle group.
Because again, that's like taking it to one corner of the quadrant
or
whatever.
Yeah, it was a pretty simple list, though. I sort of turned up, and for your listeners who don't really know War Machine, you have one...
Well, they all know War Machine now, unfortunately. They didn't want to know fucking War Machine, but they all do.
Well, you have one Warlock or Warcaster, and then you have a number of War Beasts or War Jacks. In my case, it was very simple. I'd sit there, I'd go, okay, so here's my Warlock. I have 2 small pigs, 3 medium pigs, and 5 big pigs, and that's pretty much it. There's only 4 different types of model in the army. Yeah. Very straightforward.
That sounds very you.
Yeah. But it worked.
That's how sure when you go, you look and he's got his convergence list, and there's like 1,000 flying eyes coming at you, and some big medium based beef at the back.
Some people build lists because they want them to be reactive to what their opponent's doing. Some people kind of look at it from a perspective of, can I answer this question or this question? This is all down to sort of the way the gameplay
works. You pose the question.
Yeah, from my perspective, I'd much rather build a list that does what it does well, and then. That's
you must love Paul Sloan list then. Hiding in the back corner.
Well, the problem with that is Paul's so concerned about not getting killed, he's running so far backwards that my guys walk into the sort of central zones and win.
Well, again, is a strategy. That's the one I'd recommend. And you until recently you were in contact with KR.
Yes.
But now you're on to bigger and better and different things.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I've been having great fun with that. I was fortunate enough to be able to spend some time with KR, product development and office management, that sort of stuff. That's quite a lot of fun. But at the same time, I now work for Steamforge. And to be honest, it's a different world entirely. I mean, you go from one sort of element of the industry, which is where you're making cases, making trays, that sort of stuff, things, versus... I mean, what I'm doing now for Steamforge is something I've wanted to do ever since I was about 1,000 years ago when I was young. Opened my first High Elf army book for 3rd edition Warhammer Fantasy a long, long, long time ago and fell in love with the sort of, with the stories inside, reading about the different Phoenix Kings and the Witch Elves, that sort of stuff. Well, Dark Elves and Witch Elves, that sort of stuff. And also the illustrations, which is pretty cool because I actually went to UK Games Expo this year and actually met the guy who'd done all the drawings.
Really?
Which was really cool. I actually got to shake his hand and say, like, thank you very much for bringing that world alive to me. And almost at the same convention, then got offered a job by Steamforge to go write for them.
Yeah.
So it really was a fantastic day.
I mean, so Sherwin's landed the most amazing job for
it. Sherwin.
For Sherwin. But it's something you couldn't apply for. In a sense.
You have been doing some stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah,
you did have some stuff released, some steampunk stuff released, last year. Cyberpunk, is it?
Have you guys sort of said what is I do now? Or am I
Basically,
I've literally just recently started, because I'm now the lead writer for Steamforge, which means that I am the guy who writes the stories and so on for Guild Ball, and will be doing obviously anything else that they come along with as well. I've been doing that since the start of Guild Ball. I've only ever been the writer for Guild Ball. Mm-hmm. It's really a case of being in the right place at the right time, to be true.
So how did you get that job originally?
It's interesting. At the time, way back when, about sort of 3-4 years ago now, a guy called Matt, who's now obviously one of the directors of Steamforged, came to our club, the Chelmsford Bunker, with one of his friends, because he'd literally just moved to the area and was looking for a place to play some War Machine, and he'd found out about our club somehow. I don't actually know how he did that, but anyway.
For me.
Oh, there you go, see? From this guy. And he turned up and basically played some games, and we got talking, and he was telling us about this new Kickstarter he was looking at doing, this new game in development called Guild Ball. It's essentially a sort of medieval mob football game, and it was something where... He was really enthusiastic about the world and everything. It sounded cool. I was at a loose end at the time, so I said, well, how about I give it a go writing for you? And at the time I said that, I really didn't have anything in mind except it'd be cool to contribute to the world. Write a couple of stories for him or something along those lines. So we had a quick chat about what his favourite, who his favourite authors were, what sort of feel he wanted to the universe, that sort of stuff. So I went away. I sat down, and about a week later I came back to him and said, look, here's what I've wrote. It's a piece that's... It actually made it into the Season 1 rulebook. It's called Match Day. It's actually the opener. Matt liked it so much he put it as the opening part.
Cool.
And he pretty much sat there and went, you smashed it out of the park. I love this.
Right.
And then asked me on the spot pretty much to write the rest of the Season 1. And it kind of went from there, really.
Amazing. So, yeah, so, like,
so you're the Doug Seacat, if people know the War Machine world. Is that
yeah, I kind of am, I guess. Which is still a bit new to me, to be honest. I mean, I've been that way. I've been him, I guess, for the last little while. It's just a bit.
The thing is, this is amazing because, like, Steamforge are doing so well, and you're in now at, like, you know, this early entry. Who knows where it might lead? It's fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, well done, you, sir.
I'm so happy for you, Sherry. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's impressive stuff. Impressive stuff. Mm-hmm. So we've done that. Have you been playing any games recently you want to share with us?
I've played a lot of Guild Ball.
Well, you would.
I'm not playing any more War Machine.
There's
no competition left.
Not anything to do with the Steamforge connection. It's at the last event I was going to. I was kind of sitting on the fence anyway. And the one you were on there was. Yeah. And I was kind of sitting on the fence anyway, because War Machine hadn't necessarily gone in a direction where I wanted it. It was just, after being out there for so long as a version of Mark II, naturally over time, and it's not any criticism of anything at all, but things, power creep happens if you've got a consistently evolving release system and that sort of stuff, and certain elements of the game were becoming more powerful than perhaps intended, or just, I would go into tournaments quite regularly, and basically found that all of these lists essentially were just the same list turning up over and over again with different people playing them, and I was kind of getting frustrated with that. So when Mark III dropped, it would be pretty cool, mix it up a bit, and to be quite honest, it hasn't done. So I was kind of sitting on the fence a little bit, and then when I went to this event, I was kind of disappointed when I went downstairs at lunchtime to overhear two people who didn't think I could hear them sitting there bitching about the fact that that I was probably going to win the best painted and the most boring and win the event itself. And that was, to be honest, that was kind of a bit, oh, well, I don't want to be that guy. And to be truthful, if I was kind of already sitting on the fence, yeah, you could say that they need to check their attitudes and stuff, but for the most part, I'm really not about a negative play experience for someone else, so perhaps it is time to say, you know what, I'll end on a high and step off.
You did, you dropped the mic.
I played a lot of Guild Ball. I'm ridiculously addicted to Fire Emblem Fates on my 3DS at the moment, but that's about it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I would say is one of the saddest things of War Machine Mark III, apart from the fact that they said they'd never make anything good but metal miniatures, and there would never be a Mark II. They were both early statements, but they grew beyond them. They dropped the page 5, which to me was just sad.
Yeah,
I understand why they did it, because, like, they don't want to appear like PC. Sexist.
It wasn't PC.
Yeah, you know, like, play like you've got a pair.
Yeah,
because those people who bellyache, it's like, well, do something about it.
Yeah.
Quit the game or bring something. Bring a gun to a gunfight. Don't bring a knife to a gunfight and then bellyache about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I know Paul's going to bring this Sloan crap, then I'm going to bring something to deal with it, or I'm not going to bother playing.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what War Machine's always been.
Yeah.
And that's what magic is. If you don't want to play magic and you don't want to spend money, then don't play magic.
Don't get in the ring if you can't.
Don't get in the ring and then bellyache about it.
And truthfully, War Machine remains a relatively solid game, certainly in a couple of. Yeah, I'm sure a few months they'll sort out any sort of release date kind of issues that they might have come up with, some grey areas that have come up with a new rule system. And I'm sure it'll be very fluid and work very, very well. But if you're playing the game for the last sort of 6 years fairly solidly, I just wanted a bit of a break.
Yeah.
Just to stress that.
That happens to everybody.
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, like any game system, it can be overplayed. Yeah. And we certainly all feel that way with Blood Bowl, is that we've overplayed it.
Yeah, I've been feeling that way for a little while.
Yeah. You can't deny it.
To be honest.
This current Survivor Series League has just, like, really showed us that we've overplayed it.
Just in the, what's the word, what they say, like, in the spirit of honesty.
Yeah.
I entered two leagues this year. I conceded against Paul in one of the leagues, and I conceded against Sherwin in the other league.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're here to ruin Barry's fun.
So yeah, like, things. Yeah, this game sucks balls. It's basically all I've got left to say about Blood Bowl is, like, in the same way that Sherwin's saying that after a little while, War Machine just became, like, boiled down into this Jew that was like, this is the way to play it. Yeah. Blood Bowl's become the same for me.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you ever take anything but block? Why would you ever take anything but dodge?
Exactly, just, exactly.
Why would you ever take anything but Mighty Blow when you've already got block and you're a bashy team?
Yeah, I think when a game loses its innovation and becomes simple maths, I think that's when you stop having fun and you start just...
It just becomes a process, doesn't it? Yeah.
And that's when it stops being fun. And I think that's certainly what Blood Bowl has done.
Yeah.
But that's naturally it. It hasn't had an update for 10 years.
Yeah.
And they've just been played to death. There are no unexplored areas in Blood Bowl.
You've got such narrow parameters on how you can build the lists.
Hmm.
For example, if you take a dwarf team, there really is only one way to build a dwarf team at all.
Yeah.
Well, unless you want to play nutty.
Unless you don't want to win games, in which case you take a whole bunch of linemen and a death roller. But the point is that if you want to play a relatively solid game, if you want to have a chance to win, then there's only one way to build them.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that's a bit depressing if that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's their own problem, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
but hopefully there's a reboot coming. I don't know. I don't think it's much of a reboot, to be honest.
They haven't changed the rules. I mean, sensibly, if I was GW, I'd be really looking to reinvent the teams and really take ownership of it.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most sensible way of doing it. I don't know they will. It depends on whether they're looking to build a new game system for themselves and kind of, you know, have it in the stores and work it that way, or whether they're just looking for quick bucks.
You see, if it was left to me, I'd rip block and dodge out. I'd put doubles only or something. I wouldn't even let you have them.
Yeah.
And I'd restrict their access, like, through most of the teams.
You're right. But, I mean, league play has become very stagnated, isn't it? You know, like, for Blood Bowl, for us. But because we've done everything.
Yeah.
I think I'd just rewrite all of the teams.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, they just need completely new teams.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. Well, good luck to them.
Yes.
I mean, it's a game I've spent... I've played hundreds and hundreds of games of Blood Bowl, so I hope it comes back and...
Yeah.
Response my interest. Mm. Right, so we need to thank KR sponsorship.
Yeah,
so thank you, Mr. KR.
Mr. KR,
is Mr. KR's name?
Daryl.
Daryl. Yeah. What's the KR for?
Kaiser Rush for.
Yeah, indeed. But again, what does it mean?
Did they
not program you on day one?
I know it is. It's just a not terribly exciting story. It's the maiden name of his and his wife's mother's. That's all it is.
Okay, cool.
Otherwise, those are sort of surnames that get forgotten by time. So
hang on. The maiden name of his mother
and his wife's mother.
It's like law firm, yeah?
Like surnames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Like the Kaiser.
Pre-marriage.
It was the Kaiser family
From Austria.
Right. Okay. That's good.
if your name was Paul King.
Right. Okay. So, fair enough.
People have that surname.
Okay.
Kaiser.
Right.
She must have been eager to get married. The Kaiser.
So, thanks very much, KR. Hopefully we can maintain the same relationship now that Sherwin has moved on from you.
I'm sure you guys will. No problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll try.
So, we should ask Sherwin some questions, I guess, shouldn't we?
What's happening with the Royal Rumble? What's all this about? I like the wrestling with Mr. Perfect. Was it Mr. Perfect?
Yeah, yeah. Co-heading. Yep.
Yeah.
He was my dude. He used to throw basketballs over his shoulder and put
like
them in.
For...
he'd do holes in one and this and that. Yeah.
Also a massive drug addict. And
They're all massive drug addicts.
So, okay, so just a bit of context there. Me and Sherwin are wrestling fans, and we've been...
It's real, you know?
And with the WWE Network, they've got everything online. So we've been watching all the Royal Rumbles. We're working our way through them.
All of them.
From 88 was the first one? 87?
88. First one was 98.
And we've watched now up to 98. So 99.
Jeez.
So next one is 2000.
Are they only like an hour each or something?
A bit longer.
It's worth pointing out, we're not watching the whole pay-per-view.
No.
Just the actual Royal Rumble
match.
Pre-game.
That will last somewhere between 45 minutes to an hour 20, I think.
Right.
So it will vary somewhere in there. An hour is a good...
If I was drunk enough, I could even watch one of those. And it had some wrestlers I still remembered.
The crucial point is, I mean, we were joined by a guy from our group called Dan for the last session we had. And to be honest, it's camaraderie. She's hanging out with buddies.
Well, she was there and she wasn't there. Yeah. I mean, she was there.
This guy, Dan, basically the in-joke is that he claims to have a girlfriend, but no one's ever met or seen her.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, she's imaginary. She could well have been in the room with us.
Sorry, Dan.
It's all part of his head.
It's like A Beautiful Mind, if you've ever seen that movie, where he has a friend who's who's not actually there.
Okay, like Fight Club,
yeah? Yeah, kind of exactly like that. Yeah,
yeah, brilliant.
We've been loving the Royal Rumble because they're fun. And, like, I, yeah, we they're just
if The Undertaker's in one, I'll come and watch.
He's in all of them.
Apparently he's collecting acolytes.
The last one he was collecting acolytes, Sherwin. He didn't actually compete. He just turned up and recruited.
Yeah. I mean, crucially, the good thing about the Royal Rumble matches is any wrestling match you ever watch, it's never in isolation. There's always a story beginning, it's midway through a story, or it's the end of a story. It's all storytelling, as we know what it is. The Royal Rumble match actually works outside of that because it's just a simple big brawl.
But it's still got a story. There's still overarching.
Some of the characters will have that go into them, but for the most part, it's just a lot of fun.
Sexist
fun, mostly.
Yeah, of course, it's wrestling.
Hey, they had a woman in last one. What are you talking about?
Did she?
Yeah. China.
She's dead, isn't she?
Oh yeah.
There's nothing wrong with these drugs.
That was 2016. It's lethal this year.
It's killing everybody. Gets 40 and your heart explodes.
Yeah. I mean, we watched 99, and China is like the only woman that's ever entered the. No, there's been another woman, but like she was the first woman to enter a Royal Rumble, and she's some woman. Like, Jesus.
Xena warrior princess.
Oh, like,
on steroids.
She's massive. But we've been loving it, and because we don't, it's just hilarious to watch them. And I'm loving watching it, and you see these wrestlers before they were big, and then you see all these other jobbers, and you realise how many wrestlers they've been, and these are just the ones that made it on TV. It's just like, there's masses. There's huge numbers of wrestlers.
Maybe that's what it's all about. Maybe the guy's selling the roids. So you buy enough roids, we'll give you like an hour
an
slot.
Appearance. You can run in. See, good luck. See how you do.
Yeah. And you can see why some wrestlers make it, because you can see how popular they are and how actually good they were when they were young. Like, Shawn Michaels, for example, one of the earlier ones. He's really good in the ring. Like, he can sell moves and he can do moves. That's why he was popular, wasn't he?
He's a good-looking guy, the right physique, in the right place at the right time. Works.
So anyway, we'll fit in 2000. We'll fit in 2000.
Apparently we're still on me. What have I done this?
No.
Bunch of wrestling.
We want to ask a question. So obviously
that was good.
But like, we want to ask like about Warmaster. Obviously, you don't play Warmaster, and this is a Warmaster.
He never played Warmaster.
Shut up. Right, this is a Warmaster podcast. So,
I did warn them. There'd be very little Warmaster.
But let's hear his opinions about what. They want to hear, like, is it like, what about this about the game? Like, what does he think about the game or we created?
You've created a game again.
No, this scene.
I know you
right.
Invented the colour blue.
Okay, so let's get some control over it. It's bad when your guest is having to get control of your podcast.
There is no control, sir.
But so Warmaster's cool. The Warhammer world is. Well, was. It's dead now. The Warhammer world was really rich in a lot of stuff. And, as I already told you, back in the day when I read the... I played Warhammer Fantasy for years when I was young. Mm-hmm. It was my intro into the hobby, really. And
it was a proper war game. I'll just interrupt. It's like, when you played 40K, that felt a bit weird, skirmishy. Fantasy always felt like you were playing some proper war game. You're on your way to be an old man playing historicals.
Yeah, I mean, forget the fact that you have a unit of 6 knights instead of, like, 20 or 30, as you should do. But, it's there, yeah. Whatever works for you, Barry. But anyway,
I used to love that Bretonian lance formation. What could we not have that in Warmaster?
I'm not going to swear on your podcast.
Do you not like that?
No, it was garbage.
Well,
it's just gimmicky garbage.
Gimmicky, yeah. But we're not trying to be. You know, it's not historical accurate. You could go play Napoleonic or something.
Yes, this guy's talking about historics.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we've talked about historics. There is a Warmaster Ancients.
Yeah. We'll have to mention at the end the thing we just entered for the TV show. Anyway. Back to Warmaster.
Yeah, Warmaster.
Be honest, though.
No, of course. I mean, what's really cool is the way you guys have reintroduced it in a lot of ways, especially in our local area, for example. I mean, obviously, people are out there in the world playing it. But it's really cool to see it's had such a sort of real sort of burst back into the scene, as it were. That's really cool. And especially when you're talking about things like scenarios, and this really did interest me listening to your last episode, when you're talking about scenario play, because if ever you have a game, it's either evolution or it's revolution. It's one of the two things. You're either evolving the way the game works and you're kind of introducing a few new elements to it here and there, which is definitely what you guys have been doing so far, streamlining it, kind of talking about removing some armies and things.
That's right.
The other thing that's very interesting is that you have... revolution, where you're talking about drastically changing the way the game works. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're doing with regards to scenario play.
Yeah.
Which I think, to be honest, in any game is essential.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Purely because I've had enough of seeing... One of the reasons I don't play War Master is... Well, the reasons I don't play War Master, I sat down at the club and I watched a couple of games happening. And I think the people playing is irrelevant. It doesn't really matter too much. The things I saw is I kind of looked and saw a deployment zone where you've got a 6x4 table, and one player had pretty much used about a foot
you
wide.
You don't have to use one player. That's my standard tactic.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever works for you. The point is he pretty much deployed on about the space of a postage stamp.
The bare minimum.
One corner.
The bare minimum.
And, you know, the whole point is that. That should lose you the game, having such a crap deployment.
But there's no incentive for me to spread out.
Because there isn't a scenario.
And that's
in fact, there's a negative, a perverse disincentive, because it stretches your command. You want your command tight.
Okay, yeah, exactly. And here's the other element too. So obviously that's one thing. The other one I'm looking at is, so it needs scenario play. The other element I'm looking at with it is it's just a pitch battle. There's no balance you can inherently ever have if you have just pitch battle. Because it's simply a case of who has the highest command values, who does the most damage, who can effectively move the fastest and do other elements like that. You have some armies who are just inherently always going to be crap by design because of that.
Mm. Yeah.
If you have something with scenario play, then it dramatically changes
the
way that
works.
It mixes it up. And you were talking last episode about High Elves being the top. You know, obviously High Elves have been rulers of the roost as far as you're concerned from your thing.
Well,
they're your rank one army.
Well, I'd say Jammers is rulers of the roost. Elves, Dark Elves, and High Elves are very good.
So they're rank ones. Are the only rank ones you've given?
But that's on a pitch battle, and that's potentially without any time constraints, because there's been a meta change. To like really big bait points that you just cannot get through in the available time.
Yeah, that's cool. And and if you look at scenario play, that's another disincentive to perhaps look at using those armies, because you were saying last week, well, elves would struggle because they can't simply move and they can't take up enough of the battlefield to take control in a scenario.
Well, you certainly would have to build the list in a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's good, because that forces them away from safe ground. That forces a player away from
going,
I've built one list that could beat everything.
And that would be great if we could like get there. Like in a sense, because we're looking at what we want to do is a steamroller pack in a sense for War Master, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the danger would be that these mega break armies may actually dominate on time using the clock and dominate on objectives because they're just so big.
But we're only going to know those questions by trial and error.
Exactly. And if you're looking at a world for that scenario. Then a mega break army, it's got, I've got a whole bunch of chaff. I've got tables and tables and tables worth of stuff. Well, if they're not terribly good at any one particular and you have to spread them out, then that's bad.
Yeah, but what happened in our recent game is I lost against Skaven on time. Just time. Because I couldn't literally kill enough stuff in my clock.
How many objectives were you having to take at the time?
Or none, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if there were...
How many zones did you capture?
Yeah, but again, both of those things sort of probably worked in the Skaven's favour.
Mm.
Because I'm trying to scalpel him out, and he's blobbing the whole board, in effect. His army covered the whole board.
Yeah. Okay. We need to play a lot more games, like, between ourselves, and get Janna's and, Jim as well, like, try them out against them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you're right, because I'd love to run an event, like, seeing how we've got this event scene going, and we'd love to put an event where we have three games, three different scenarios, but all the tables can play that scenario. That would be fantastic, because then you would have, I think that would be really interesting to see, well, how do armies perform then?
Definitely. Yeah, because what happens when you tend to push these limits, like in a game like Confrontation, where they had, it was really scenario based.
They'd swear at me.
But what they had to do is they had to start limiting model count.
Yeah.
Because people were just bringing like incredible spam lists that you just couldn't get through. Like 1,000 zombies. Well, not 1,000, but a lot of zombies. Way more zombies. Because if you roll that double six, you're killing stuff.
Yeah.
In Confrontation, it's a really weird system. Basically, you roll two dice for damage, and if you roll a double six, you kill it.
Well, with weird, he means great.
Yeah. It's a great game, but that would incentivize you throwing like hundreds of dice rather than having good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't really want to go there, do you?
No.
There's got to be a place in a game, for a game to have balance, for a game to be worth playing, you've got to have elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have elements where you need elite troops or you need chaff or you need something else. It's got to be rock, paper, scissors.
That's exactly the
way the world works.
So I think the more we push down this route and the more people start expanding their break, that's the point where you have to say, well, maybe there's an upper break limit. Maybe you can't have more than break 15, or maybe can't have more than break 40.
Yeah, mix it up. These are all things.
Because I genuinely think coming soon, if it keeps evolving the way it is, more games will be decided on running out of clock because you can't physically do the damage.
And we don't want that. And isn't that as a scene? I'd rather games finish to a natural conclusion. The clock system is there to help run an event and to keep people focused. But it would be, you're right. If more games weren't finishing, as in, we're going off the clock and people, that is a tactic. We have to, look at that.
That's the beauty of having, as you've set up, a yearly review. Yeah. Where you can literally look at that and go, in the last four tournaments this year, a lot of the games were won that way. We don't want it to be that way, so how can we stop it happening?
Yeah.
And that's good. I mean, that's healthy. Yeah. That's how it should be. I mean, most war games tend to descend, in my experience, to this horrible thing where people are always, even if they're playing practice games, in pursuit of the one list that will be all powerful. It's more powerful than everything else.
Yeah.
If once a year you're mixing that up and saying, well, that might have been your one list last year, but it's not anymore.
Yeah.
Then that's good. Yeah. It forces players to carry on playing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you suddenly might find that unit that's garbage. Mm-hmm. That Snotling pump truck or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was
they were quite
garbage.
They were quite good.
Yeah. If you look at it and go, okay, so that wasn't very good last year, but this year it's got a real place.
Yeah,
that's good.
Because what we've created now is a scene of players, and definitely that's a tournament scene going on very nicely. We've put the founding in, so how they're organised and what people are expecting. And going into 2017, when hopefully we reorganise the army list to show what we're going to concentrate on pushing forward, and then once we've done that, when we can start looking at how do we want to create how do we perfect the perfect tournament for Warmaster?
Mm.
Right now what we've got is three straight games. It's been great to begin with, but let's not assume that is the best it could ever be. Things can always improve. It's going forward. I mean, because even if we cut with the army list question, even if we cut it back to what we're thinking,
25.
Yeah. I mean,
and the great thing is we're not bringing any great ego into this, so we're not trying to shoehorn new lists in. We don't want any more new lists. We want to get the list under control.
I'm still yet to see a Wood Elf army on the table or several others.
One quite recently in a Tri-Wiz.
Oh, okay. But it did well. It didn't win.
I'm sure it won't.
No, it didn't win. I asked them. Sure? I asked them about it. Yeah. But there are army lists that we have not yet seen. I haven't seen a Chaos Dwarf.
Yeah, and the other thing is, as we're only dealing with the UK, we're not having to get any green lights from anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're trying to impose a world army. So we're not having to go through people who hold gate keys GW's tacit. No, this is just, if you use our house rules, these are the house rules.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you want to adopt the house rules, feel free. But if you want to say, these house rules are crap, I don't want to use them, don't use them. Yeah. Do what you want to do.
Essentially, unless you're the games designers, developers, manufacturers, whatever, you can never do that.
Yeah.
All you can do is say, well, these are our events, this is what we play locally, and this is it. And if you want to come to our events, then you are going to have to play this, because that's what the event is.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, I mean, ultimately, what I think you guys are doing, from what I've seen, mm-hmm. and granted, I'm not necessarily part of an intimate part of the community that you guys mm-hmm. have, but it seems to be really setting the standard going forward, which is really cool. It's good. I mean, you guys have achieved quite a lot. And hopefully it will carry on evolving. Hopefully it'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, we'll come on, tack on to future events. So the next thing is the Derby War Games Show. Derby World War Games
Casual Show. Play event.
Well, it probably will be, but I mean, unless you attempt these things, it doesn't happen at all, does it?
First year.
That's absolutely right.
So
do I take it Warmaster wasn't your boat? Because competitively balanced enough?
Actually, I looked at Warmaster. I've got the rule book as it currently is. I've got the army list as it currently is from Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I was considering building armies and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, I looked at the game and I saw a number of balance issues which I had questions about.
Yeah.
And I had some...
You were...
Honestly, I looked at it and thought, well, I think if I start playing this game within a few months, I'll end up being quite frustrated due to either the design grey areas I see or the lack of game balance that I perceive, a lack of scenario play, that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
fair enough.
If you introduce those elements, I'll happily play it.
I
mean that very honestly.
So hopefully we can get it to that stage one day. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And the flies are good, but we've recently found out that they're not particularly good against Skaven. You just run into and they just drag you out of the air and eat you.
Yeah, because that's Skaven rules.
So flies are particularly poo against Skaven.
Well, okay. everyone's got like rock paper scissors.
That's right.
It's nice to hear sharing because it's like it's you know, we are trying to always improve this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like certainly, if we can clear up all of the grey areas and give out aids to like player aids and stuff and like okay, so you know, this is how.
Wanted to
like,
reword that.
Oh no, all right, you know what I mean? Like guides, like right. As in like you know, game guides to like you know the trickiest things in the game.
Yeah, Jim.
He's doing it. Yeah, I know he's doing it, but like you know, that's
he's just on holiday.
That's what we're trying. Where we're trying to go. So if we could, because we're not gonna ever assume that you know we make something perfect. But it would be great if we can get it to that stage. Okay. Yes. Anything else you want to mention about Warmaster while we're on the topic?
No. I will happily jump in if you guys sort of get to an overbalance. I'm even happy to help you test it if that sort of thing.
Interesting.
If you get to there.
Yeah.
I have no problems.
You're a man of leisure now.
Yeah.
Semi-leisure, working from home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll soon be watching Jeremy Kyle in the morning.
I'll soon be working my arse off in the morning.
Yeah.
Right, so Sherwin's also a bit of a painter, so I thought, as you know, I'm
just
an avid painter in getting rid to paint everything for me, we'd maybe ask Sherwin what his technique is, his basic technique, and
He's a very good painter.
He is a very good
painter. He wins awards.
Yeah, you got a couple of PP coins, didn't you, this year?
Yeah, I do alright, I get by. To be honest. I don't know, I'm one of those rare people, those weird sort of, you know, masochists who actually enjoy painting.
There are many of them.
Who sits down as a gamer.
I had some free time today and I was painting a trench buster.
I think I am on the minority.
Yeah.
Because why would you play a game like this if you didn't like painting?
I don't know, it depends what you're playing. I mean, it depends on the game system, it depends on what people have been able to get by with. I mean, if, for example, a lot of War Machine events, I don't think have ever really, other than unless you're playing in a Masters, have any strict painting requirements at all. So you could just turn up with the unpainted Masters and just go that way.
No painting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think
models built, sightlines only.
Yeah, I think that's the worst standard to possibly set.
You don't even need sightlines, you do it on the shoulders.
You've always got that balance between inclusion and exclusion.
Yeah.
And I think going whole hog with saying, you know what, you don't need to paint anything. You can just turn up and play. I think that's wrong. I think it's not that hard. Even if you're literally going to grab the thing, paint three stripes on
it. We had this discussion Mr. Fantasy last week.
Yeah. Did you remember that story?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Three-coloured spray.
Three-coloured bug spray.
I've considered doing that in kind of a weird sort of, you know, like a trickle or
rebel
kind of colours. You can paint it very nicely doing that, I'm sure.
They didn't.
This is the guy just burning through, isn't it? But anyway.
So what's your technique? Yeah. Basic technique. We can't talk all night. But
yeah, absolutely.
Just
yeah.
Give some insight as to how you do things. Grey undercoat, black undercoat.
You put white undercoat. I always use white undercoat.
Because you're a masochist. That's what we've said already.
No. The problem if you have black is very good if you want to paint things quickly. If you just literally want to paint something that's wearing a lot of armour, like a small Warmaster dwarf or something, or a knight, where it's covered in armour, you can undercoat the thing black. You can dry brush it with a metal colour, and lo and behold, there's a very good finish straight away. Having your army done.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking notes.
If you're looking at painting something and you want a bit more detail to it, then white is a much better colour because you'll be able to pick out a lot more of the detail.
Okay.
One thing you can always do is you can undercoat white, then put a thin layer of wash over it, anything brown or sort of sepia coloured, and immediately you'll see an awful lot of the detail on the model.
Yeah.
That's a very good
way to. So has your painting been self-taught, or is it your one for looking at guides somewhere?
It started out with something where I looked at a guide. I think it was an old GW painting guide, one of the old Citadel ones from years and years and years ago. And I kind of picked up a few things like dry brushing. That's probably the most essential first skill if you're looking at learning to
paint. So what kind of brush do you use for that? You use a GW brush or you just hack down an old brush?
I'm generally using Games and Gears brushes for the most part at the moment because I've had quite a lot of fun with those guys.
Games and Gears.
Okay.
Sam?
Yeah.
Okay.
I quite like those brushes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Apparently Barry doesn't approve.
No, I don't know.
We'll have a conversation.
I'm not a painter, am I? I'm not a painter, but my painting colleagues
don't like them, I guess.
Yeah, apparently. But hey, Sam.
No, he's done a range of synthetic brushes, which I really get on with. I think they're really good.
Are those like plastic nib brushes?
I've got one of those.
Yeah.
I won one of those at the workshop.
That's
for really doing sort of writing on a banner or something else like that.
All right, excellent.
But anyway, I've been using those, and they're kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so he's got the dry brush in that range, is there?
Mm-hmm. There's a dry brush in that range. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, basic painting. Sorry, because we're getting away from the topic again.
No, it's just interesting to hear your undercoat white, and then wash.
Yeah, no. Undercoat white, you can do a wash if you want.
You don't do that. I only want to know what you do.
Okay, cool. So
undercoat white. Okay, I know what other people do.
Right, fine. Undercoat white.
Yeah.
Do the armour first. Okay. Because that will involve dry brushing, which is messy.
So then, you dry brush the armour, yeah?
Yeah, I'll paint the armour, whatever the base colour is. Yeah. I'll then dry brush over the... I start with a colour called Brass Scorpion from GW. I'll then literally... I'll start with Old Timbits, which mm-hmm. I don't know what the new name of it is now.
Yeah.
I have the old pots of it. Then I will dry brush Brass Scorpion, dry brush Mithril Silver, put a wash over it, a brown wash, come back to it, dry brush Mithril Silver over it, armour is done at that point. Don't do anything else with armour. Then I'll generally tend to work... It's almost in a weird way. You work outwards inwards. You do areas of skin first, which is base colour, wash, then highlight, and have done. Then you move on to clothes, then you move on to weapons last. So it's almost like you're going out from the model outwards.
Okay.
Outwards and do it that way. But the point is that...
Is that because you're painting white you do it that way, or...?
Maybe. Naturally to me, that's how I do it. I generally tend to work in sections. Mm. I think the way I paint is I never normally know exactly what colours I'm going to use. I'm very poor at visualising what colours I want to use on the model until it starts coming out.
What is something that you've painted that you think that's done well and something that you've hated painting and not happy with?
That's two different questions for the last one. The model I hated painting the most in memory is something called a Sacral Vault for War Machine. It's a big, large, it's on 120mm diameter circular base. It's a very big lump of rock, basically, with a lot of candles. It's got a lot of skulls. It's got a lot of souls flying around it. It's got so much extra crap gubbins on it that it literally took me about 30 hours to paint. I will never paint another one of those models again. I mean, it actually won the war, which is cool. I'm glad it did, because I only put it in because it had literally taken so long to paint it, which was worth something. I've never used it on the battlefield. I don't know I ever will.
Fair enough.
So that's that. I mean, models I've sort of painted and not really enjoyed how they've come out much, I don't know.
What is something that stood out as you really enjoyed painting?
You didn't enjoy painting the Sacral Vault.
I didn't enjoy painting the Sacral Vault at all.
You went to town on those gory pigs, didn't you? With the gore pigs.
One of the most fun models to paint that I can honestly think of is a War Machine Minions Warhog. There's so much character in that model. It's one of those models where, as you're painting, and this is the best part about being a painter, is it doesn't matter how good you are. As you start painting a model, you really start noticing all the extra detail and the character of the model really comes through.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one of those. It's absolutely one of my favourite models to paint because it's basically, for those of you who don't know, it's a giant oversized ball with robot limbs. And it's pretty cool. I mean, you can really characterise... It's one of those sort of orky kind of models for your listeners who are not familiar with the War Machine world. So you can really go to town customising bits of rust or make it look like, it's interesting.
Of yours that I think I've always thought is very well done is your Convergence Army, because it isn't that much it's well painted, it's the colour codes, it's the whiteness of the white armour. Because Convergence are a faction in War Machine, and Sherwin's just done, it's a robotic faction, and Sherwin's managed, I think it looks like something out of Pacific Rim, in a sense that, I know it just pops, it's just like, it's like manga style painting, and it's just, I just really like the look of it.
Do you do brown whites, or do you do blue whites, is that?
Brown whites.
Brown whites.
I always do brown whites. I've always worked with warmer colours. I very rarely work with cold colours.
Okay. Yeah.
I find they generally tend to go nice together.
A guide that I can recommend to everyone that might be easy to get hold of is in White Dwarf issue 94, which was in November 2015. They did a painting issue.
Right.
So like a white, they're small white, weekly White Dwarfs. So this one was all about painting and had tons of techniques.
Did it do the Red Gem one?
The
elf red gem that I've seen about 4,000 times.
Yeah. It's quite good. Works.
I'm sure it does.
Do you know, interestingly, if you are looking at guides, because obviously that's what you just mentioned there, and if you do struggle to get that, another good thing you can do on painting is there's things like painting hangouts. There's a million and one different painting groups on Facebook. There's one which the one I know is a War Machine one. It's the War Machine
Men of John.
No, I wasn't going to mention him, but he's also very good for this sort of stuff. It's a war machine painting sort of one, but you can paint whatever you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to put
war
machine models on it. And effectively, it's almost like it can just be a sort of Skype call or whatever, chat, where people are just hanging out painting. And you can ask other painters for techniques and that sort of stuff.
Brilliant.
And
say, look, this that's a good idea. Yeah,
yeah. And go from there. And if nothing else, it's a social element. It gets people talking and that sort of stuff.
Well, maybe Paul will do some little videos for us. Painting
maybe
his stuff.
Maybe you can make a War Master one.
Get a little webcam running.
How do I paint my Skaven quickly?
Noses. So, what do you hold your miniatures on? Because I know you're not supposed to touch them. You just touch them. You don't care.
Yeah. Use hands.
You just touch them. You don't mount them on a champagne cork.
No, I'm not that good a painter.
Okay.
I literally hold my models and drop my models on a regular basis. If people ever tell me models look good, it's probably because I've dropped them about 5 times. I have to repaint.
For War Master, I paint off a ruler. You know, like if there's a question. I have a painting stick, and that's a ruler, and that's what I mount. That's what I mount a strip on
this year. Not many, but 10. 10 mil models, and Rid's painted about 400.
The best thing I could recommend painting, honestly, since you want to know this, is don't try to run before you can walk. Work with base colours. Starting from a beginning perspective, start with base colours, do all of those, put a wash over it, and instantly the model will look fantastic.
Yeah.
Before you think about blending, before you think about dry brushing, anything else, put a wash over it, and for the most part, especially if you're playing War Master where everything's very small, your army will look utterly fantastic.
Yeah.
You won't need to progress.
Because I've heard people telling me, painting War Master models must be really difficult. And actually, it's easier, I think, because they're small.
Yeah.
You just don't need to do a lot of effort to them to make them look, I think, nice. You know, like at our recent event, Christoph the Belgian won the painting award, and his army was painted like with quite bright highlights in his Orc and Goblin army. He managed to do some fantastic freehand design.
Yeah,
work.
I was going
to
say,
his standard of painting, it was great, but it was like, it was almost, in a sense, almost like Jim likes to paint almost cartoony, in a sense, that bright highlights on the model, but at that, if you look up really up close, it's one level, but you look at the army in general from gaming point of view, like this distance to the stuff on my shelf, then it looks fine. I mean, like, I'm never going to be the best painter, but like the dwarves up there, I'm quite happy with, because they look fine at the distance you play the game at.
The other nice thing that comes up there, is if you've done the base front and then washed it, you can always then come back to it and start adding something else as your ability improves. Mm-hmm. And don't try and have a style. Your style, if you as a painter, will naturally come to you as you paint more models, mm-hmm. and it'll just be the way you do things. Don't sort of sit there and go, I want to make a cel-shaded looking army, or I want to use bright cartoony colours, or I want it to look really dark and kind of really hyper-realistic. Yeah. Don't do that. As a painter, just kind of paint the way that it comes out naturally to you. And over time, practice.
And it's like painting, isn't it? Like, it's most things in life, is it's practice, and don't ever put yourself down. And like, as if it's good for you, it's good for you, isn't it?
Do like Bob Ross, happy little accidents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy little accidents. He's my hero.
Exactly.
He's everybody's hero. He should be everybody's hero.
Yeah.
If you don't know who he is, go find him.
Watch his rap battle. Bob Ross is in a epic rap battle of history.
Yeah, Barry and I were going to recommend Joy of Painting. But
That's not him. That's not what we're talking about.
We're talking about Joy of Painting. I don't know. Who's Paul's talking about?
Who are you talking about?
Bob Ross is a famous painter. He's
the bearded guy.
Yeah, it was him versus Picasso. You know, it was in an epic rap battle of history.
Oh, right.
We're not down with that.
You keep hitting me with these programs, Paul. You should be a TV critic.
Yeah.
So, just one more thing about TV. Paul's managed to enter us for a competition.
Yes, Time Lord Commanders, is that it?
Never heard of it.
Yes.
Time
Commanders.
Never heard of it.
Yes.
Until you pointed it out.
Anyway.
What channel's it on?
Channel BBC 4.
That's not Channel 4.
BBC 4, that's
No, no, it's like...
BBC 4, that's highbrow.
Yeah.
That's highbrow.
Yeah.
I thought they'd strip funding back from...
Or maybe it's only online, I don't know, but
BBC 4's all right. BBC 3 got...
Oh, it's BBC 3?
Got bulleted.
So, it's a show that...
Good riddance.
I guess it's a show that's not been on the air for quite a while, but basically, it's a televised computer game where it's the Total War engine, so they put a team of 3 people against the computer, which has supposedly been programmed, it says, by experts, but you refight a battle from history. So they used the Total War game engine to refight famous battles from history, and would televise the team trying to do it.
Do we know what battle we're going
to
be fighting?
Well, no, we wouldn't know. I've entered
up,
us, but we have to see if we even get on the show, don't we? I mean, I'm sure loads of people are... It's only just...
Oh, yeah, I think millions of people will sign up for this, Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, maybe the Tyranid Invasion of Ultramar.
Oh, that's amazing. But like, it would be cool if we. I mean, I'll keep you posted. But I mean, yeah. I rang.
We've got Janus, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be our team. Me, you, and Janus.
No, Janus and you,
Janus.
Yeah, Janus.
All making tea,
carrying orders out.
I'll be
clicking
his brand. Yeah.
I do this, yes sir, yes sir.
I've never met this guy, but I can already tell that he's aide de camp there.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, if we get in, that would be hilarious. Because I'd love to see us being interviewed about like our.
Well, we can live stream it. YouTube channel.
Brilliant. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm trying to work out how long we've been going. I think we've probably done over an hour already.
Yeah, we've done time. So we have point there. The future of Sherwin.
Yeah, you can talk a bit about the future, Joe.
If you want. I mean,
what is the future of Joe?
What is it, Joe?
Well, it's death.
Taxes.
We'll go at some point. Yeah. I don't know. To be honest, I hope that I'm at Steamforge for a very long time, happily writing Guild Ball stuff, happily writing anything else that comes up. And yeah, one day.
Because I'm guessing this job of yours, you'll be writing fluff for other stuff as well, won't you?
I imagine so.
Yeah.
At the moment, there are a few things flying around the pipe world, which I'm not really allowed to talk to you about.
Of course, but say they do another game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're going to have to read up on it and become the lore master of that game, aren't you?
No, I don't read up on it. I just write it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Create the lore of it.
Yeah, yeah. And for the most part, that's how it works.
Yeah.
An interesting point is Sherwin and Paul are always arguing over fluff. I have no interest in fluff, but Sherwin's always trying to tell me how bad Paul is at fluff. And
nonsense.
How wrong his fluff is. How poor he puts across the fluff. And it's like, he's just making this up.
No, I'm not.
I don't care.
Paul Porn is immortal elves. Yeah, absolutely.
They are. Well, they last for a long time.
They last for a long time.
I never said they were immortal.
Yes,
like fairy.
Yeah. Paul isn't allowed to do the Chaos Dwarf Warmaster one because he'll just screw it all up.
Oh, okay. So when we get round to that, you're coming back to do the fluff.
Yeah, as much as I don't like to do it, I'm coming back to do it.
To do the fluff, right.
Because you'll get it wrong.
You're going to have to tell us about the hats because I've got no idea.
That's how it works.
What on earth the hat is about?
Well, it depends on your status in the Chaos Dwarf society, doesn't it?
How big your hat is.
Yeah, if you've got a really big hat, then you must be inborn. Yeah, make sure you're the same height as a normal person.
And you just buy a bigger hat.
Well,
make a bigger hat.
No, they're not buy. They're given to you.
By who?
By the one hat maker of Zagarond or whatever.
Oh, this sounds bad. So why does he face them out?
You don't remember Man O' War? The boats had hats.
Boats had hats.
If you ever want to, you can look at the old Man O' War models. The boats had giant hats.
Fantastic.
Yep. The boats were, they shot, they were so powerful with their guns that they actually capsized when they fired their guns.
Yep.
So this time next year, Sherwin's going to come back. Emperor Sherwin.
Why not?
With
Space Marine Legions. Yeah.
That's right,
Right, so I'm on holiday now for a little while, so there's probably not going to be one next Friday.
We have planned a date, though, which will go off. Yeah.
So there'll be one this Friday, because then we'll be released on Fridays. There'll be none next Friday, and then the Friday after, there'll be another one where we'll be doing... Probably Skaven Armoury.
We can if you want
to do it, man.
Yeah, if you want to do
just
the army,
do it.
If you want to do the army view, then
bite the cheese.
Yeah, then Skaven already. Because I'll have played Janna's the day before. Yeah, with a Skaven. I'll be using Skaven. Yeah, I want to. I'm gonna play him in the pub in Saffron Warden.
Okay, which one?
The King's Arms.
Oh, okay, I used to work in Saffron Warden, so.
Oh right, okay, it's very posh. But yeah, I'll at least have had another game of them under my belt. If we want to do the army review,
let's do it.
I would do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. It's time.
I'll enjoy the fluff for that one. The best fluff.
Just making it up. Yeah.
No.
Just quickly, if you don't mind. So where did Skaven come from?
Tilly.
Okay, and how did that happen?
They were basically.
It's like this all the time.
This
by the
huge
way.
Yeah. tower, like basically, a race of men decided to build this huge clock tower to worship their ancient gods.
Right.
And they were kept making it, and it was like it was getting behind schedule. You know, like, and then this mysterious person turned up and was like, "Hey, I can. This will be built overnight if you like. If I can have a promise back." Like, is in like a favour back, and he did that.
So it's like the Pied Piper.
Yeah. He did that, and he's like, right, I want all of your children, and the people were like, and the tower.
Are you
was
making
built.
This up?
No. And then the tower was built overnight, and they were like, oh, that's fantastic. And he's like, well, I want all your kids, and they were like, well, no, we're gonna go back on the deal.
Yeah,
so he go fair enough. Then he played a little song, and the city filled up with rats. and then that's how the Skaven, like, they people all died out, and okay. eventually those rats got bigger, and that's where Skaven come from.
You missed the most important part of
Skaven Blight, that was so cool.
Yeah, that's it. He's not bad, but he missed the most important part.
Well, don't spoil it! We're going to save this for another one. Sherman's going to edumacate it. Well, I can't one. Believe it's not. It's just the story of the Pied Piper. That's what it is. It's like, it's like, well done, fluff, men. Let's go. Hansel and Gretel next. Oh, dear God. Right, so that's going to be it for tonight. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Sherwin, for yes. coming. I'll shake your hand,
shake
sir.
Shake your hand.
Mm-hmm. Shaky hand.
Yes, thank you for
grip.
Having me.
He's got a firm grip. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have him back now. He's a three-star, all-star.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
I have to come back if you want me.
Yeah.
And I've got some awesome music for you. It's not on the sheet. It's mm-hmm. truly stupendous. So that was a Warmaster podcast episode 27.
Obviously,
with Paul and Barry and Sherwin.
Listeners, if you liked our little creative interlude and you liked us chatting with somebody else, and you want to comment, please comment. You know, and yeah, we can always do more of this. It's quite easy to do.
And tell him he's wrong about Warmaster. Because he is.
All right. Right.
Good night.
Night.
Bye.
Yeah.